You know, I want to interview Larry in this next session. Now, he's written a bunch of material, and I believe you could read the material about the grassroots movement, about different types of church, your story. Yeah. I'm sure it's all there in writing. But I like this concept of 10,000 hours that Malcolm Gladwell talks about in, you know, in The Outlier.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And every time I meet someone like Larry who's done stuff, been around the block, been battle-tested, who's faced many trials, who, it's like, today I feel this way. It's like, here, founding CLI, if I think about the whole journey, mm-hmm. and I think about all the failures, and all mm-hmm. this, like, by God's grace, we yeah. failed forward. I think right. about all that, and then I meet you, who founded something as well, and you know, for the last decades, we've been right. in the trenches.
Yes.
And now we're getting old, too.
I'm a lot older than you are.
I comfort myself with the fact that you are only, I'm 11 years younger
you
than
are.
You. Okay, so I comfort
your
myself.
Your best days are so good.
Yeah, I know. I get that. I understand all that. But when I meet you, I am very inspired. As you look back at from the early days to now, what's one of the most difficult things you've dealt with?
Well, the most difficult thing I think that I dealt with was when I realized I had given thousands of hours to disciple and train leaders that I love dearly. And during a very difficult time in our leadership, after I was leading this new work about 10 to 12 years, I realized that I had no fathers in my life. I had no one to turn to. And some of these good friends started to really question some things in my life.
Okay.
And really, they were, and even believe things were said about me. I mean, I had a leader, someone that I loved dearly, who had written a letter, sent it to many of our leaders, and basically said, Larry Crowder is unteachable. Just went down,
down the line.
That's an integrity issue for me.
Yeah.
Being teachable is extremely important
for
me.
Yeah.
So anyway, he writes this letter, and then, you know, he leaves our church, and a bunch of people leave and say, there must be something wrong with Larry Crowder. I remember some people coming and say, we just wish we knew what was wrong with you.
Yeah.
And in fact, I remember another leader saying, we know there's something wrong with you, we just don't know what it is. I'm going to leave the church.
Right.
I know there's something wrong, I just don't know what it is.
Right.
And so, and all this stuff happens. Well, about 15 years later, this same leader came back to me. And he said, did I do anything that was hurtful to you? And I said, well, there's one thing. I said, I've forgiven you. It's over. It's gone.
Yeah, fine.
Remember the time you wrote, you know, you were in that letter? He said, what letter? I explained the letter.
Yeah.
He said, I wrote that? I said, yeah, you wrote the letter. He said, I don't remember that letter. He said, in fact, I don't even believe that. I don't even believe you are teachable. I don't believe you're unteachable. But for 15 years, we're carrying all this stuff. And it's just spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was making me into the leader God called me to be.
Yeah.
And I understand other leaders now. I had a leader just a couple of days ago and said, things going on in our church and people leaving and I don't know what to do. Well, I understand that now.
Yeah.
Because you've been through the fire and somehow you come out the other side with grace to help other people.
So what are the four ways that you made it through the fire when you were attacked like that?
Well, I think the first way is I had to come to the place where I realized that all that matters, I'm loved by Jesus.
Right.
God the Father loves me.
Yeah.
And I had to get it. It was here, but I had to go here.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, I was a people pleaser.
Yeah. Well, and aren't we all pastors oftentimes? Yeah. We want to please God. We want to please others.
Right.
Understand that. Right. Okay, we get that.
That was, I think, was number one. Number two is a revelation of the grace of God that whatever happened, God's grace will carry me through. And I needed that revelation of the grace of God. The third area was that I had a purpose in my heart that I would not pick up an offense and that I would not in any way allow a root of bitterness, Hebrews 12:15, to spring up, because it would not just defile me, defile my family. It would, in fact, my own kids were affected by it. I remember one of my daughters said, I don't believe this. How can people say these things about my dad, you know?
Yeah.
And it was affecting my family.
Yeah.
And so I think I had to really get free from that whole area of finding forgiveness, freedom, forgiving, right. and walking right. in freedom and release. And I think the last area was I couldn't quit on the vision God gave.
Yeah.
Because vision propels us forward, and God gave a vision to see His church built in the nations of the world. And I look back, and Henry, I'm so glad I didn't quit.
Yeah.
This is the best time of my life. I mean, my walk with Jesus, my walk with my wife, my walk with my kids and my family, the leaders I work with are amazing. You've met Brian, you've met some of our leaders. They're amazing leaders and throughout the world. And I feel very, very blessed, but we had to walk through those times.
Yeah.
And God gave grace in the midst of it.
Do you believe that somebody who is broken can do a house church? Is there a room, if someone has been beat up maybe in the business world or through family dysfunctions and sin and organizationally, you know, have you seen broken people come back and be part of this house church movement?
I sure have, because when we're broken and God gives us grace and fixes us, it's like a bone that's been broken. That bone is stronger at that point where it's healed than it was before it was broken.
Yeah.
And some of the best house church leaders I know are those who were broken. Pastors who were broken, business leaders who were broken, those in marriages that were broken, those in family situations that were broken. And I've said many, many times, privately and publicly, I find there's many spiritual fathers, spiritual mothers who can lead house churches who had problems in their own family. And the devil tells them, well, look at your daughter, look at your son, look what's happened here, and that there's no way that God could ever use you. And that's a lie from the pit of hell. In fact, I find persons who've experienced those things will be more effective because they'll understand the grace of God, the mercy of God, they'll understand the forgiveness of God, they'll understand disappointment, and they'll understand people going through the same things.
Yeah. If you look at enthusiasm, the utopian enthusiasm, and the struggled to gain enthusiasm where you've got attacked by the evil one. You know, it seems like enthusiasm and zeal, and there's like different nuances to that, even if you think about planting a house church. I want you to comment on that a little bit, because, you know, if you look at your life, I know for myself, I've gone through utopia phases where I just want to build and, and then I find that disappointment comes along. Yeah. And how do you keep your enthusiasm? And
Well, that's what we need people in our lives. We need, you can't listen to everyone.
No.
But, because man, you're crazy if you do, but you listen to a few people. And we need people in our lives so we know love us and believe in us. That's what we need spiritual fathers. That's what we need peers in our lives. And that's what we need people in life who will speak the truth and love to us, but we know they have our best interests at heart.
Okay.
And then I find then I can be picked up from the heap of rubble that I find myself in, and because I know God's for me, and I know they're for me, and then I can move ahead to the next thing God has for me.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you some questions. Is it possible to have a small group in the inner city that is really thriving? In the inner city of the United States where there's blight, and someone's called to do this. I mean, where there many of the fathers have left the home, a lot of single moms. Is it possible that somebody's going to plant a house church there?
It's more than possible. Now, a lot of our experience has been more of rural America.
Okay.
A lot of our experience, because I'm a rural guy.
Rural America has been blighted by meth.
Oh,
So we're talking, I'm talking in a blight area.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen a movement like this? I mean, no holy buildings, no holy men.
Yes.
You're just talking relationships. Yes. Is that possible?
It is possible.
That somebody out there can get called to this and do this.
Yes, and it's now happening throughout our nation. It's happening already.
You've seen one.
I can give you some examples of different parts of the United States where there are these house church networks who are starting. A lot of those are initial stages, but where it's happening.
Yes, okay.
I sure can. I can show you West Coast, East Coast, in between. Yeah.
Really? Okay. What about the whole political rancor of our country right now? If you look at our country, the United States, you know, I'd imagine in places like Africa, there's so much polarization in Europe and so forth. And in Christianity, there was a news story I read that Christianity is considered like a negative by a large percentage of our country now. Given this kind of polarizing world, is house churches going to thrive in that?
I think it will thrive in that because house church is not latching on to the religious system per se.
Okay.
The house church is common, ordinary people and who have got a hold of who God is, and God's calling their lives, and just wants to help people. I mean, true house churches, you're going to help people who are hurting or struggling or impoverished. That's going to be the call. That's what you want to do.
Now, earlier I was listening to one of your presentations. You mentioned about how some of the dangers, like you can have an arrogant leader who becomes like the Pope of Vilna.
Right.
How do you guard against that? Where you are self-aware that you are going to stay in that path of servanthood?
Well, I think we must have outside accountability in our lives.
Okay.
I sat in a restaurant a few years ago with a leader of a large movement, a global movement.
Okay.
He asked me to speak at his conference, and I had this inside, this concern in my heart that this man was being an autocratic leader.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, who can fire you? Who do you have that can speak into your life? He said, really? No one right now. And you know, within months, that entire movement went to nothing. They had all kinds of churches in the nations, went to nothing. Because he made some decisions that were not biblical decisions.
Right.
And had no one to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
So I tell house church leaders or apostolic leaders, whatever, we all need people that we trust who will speak into our lives and will speak the truth in love to us. And so if you're going to plan a house church, you need to be accountable to someone, to a group somewhere, because there's none of us that are, you know, at a place where we couldn't fall because of the devil. I mean, the devil's a liar.
Yeah. One of the things I want you to comment about our ordination understanding. Okay.
Yeah.
So we understand ordination as being, like in the early church, it was the commending. It was someone else recognized that you had a calling, that you had a holy life to walk in that calling, and that you had gifts from ministry that someone else noticed it.
Yes.
Okay. So we also believe that at Christian Leaders Institute that there are three recommendations. If you're married, one from your spouse, because we hear in Timothy 2 about if you can't manage your own home. So there has to be that spouse thing, and also two other recommendations. Now, here's what's interesting. We find that it's very easy to get two recommendations, but the third one is difficult.
Hmm.
We also find that we honor the fact that three are needed because there is something about the third one by which seems to show that I am accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I care
that
I'm in relationship with others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as somebody outside of our culture,
because
this is our culture, what do you think about that?
I think it's fantastic. I think three is the right amount.
Okay.
I think having a spouse as one of the three is proper, is right. I think it's scriptural. And I think it's important because ordination, as we understand it, and in agreement with you, is really God's the one who calls and ordains people for ministry. But we need that affirmation from others in the body of Christ who see that for the purpose of accountability.
Right.
So it keeps us from pitfalls.
Yeah.
And I think there's great wisdom in what you're doing with CLI.
Now, what I like that I've noticed to what you're doing, which your ministry has plowed the way on, is your apostolic leadership team.
Yeah.
And I think that's very cross-pollinating to us as we develop these house church ordination structures of like a house church starter. We're going to be doing like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like just a local deacon.
Right.
And then a officiant who will teach how to do weddings and funerals.
Sure,
but a little bit more. But very much people who are ordinary local Christians. And then a house church pastor with more training.
Yep.
And then even a house church apostle who's function to start new churches.
Yes.
You know, you're not an apostle unless you're actually doing it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The proof is in the pudding.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So what we're working
Paul
on...
Paul said to the Corinthians, you're the proof of my apostleship.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So what we're working on, too, is then to have, like, support for planting house churches, being in connection, relational.
Yes.
You know, we'll do various things. And one of them is the connection to Dove, in that like if, after people get their ordination here, you're welcoming that they can check you out, click on your website. Who knows what God will have for that.
And we'll talk. We can talk more about that in another setting. But we're a relational movement, and we love the partnership we have with you. What you're doing in training in the nations is just a God thing for this generation. You've only begun to see what God's going to do through CLI. I am convinced of that in my heart and my spirit. And we, you know, we're a relational movement. We're a growing movement relationally worldwide. We have apostolic teams all over the world. So I think there's times we'll cross paths and, we'll work together and help one another and we'll have our own streams of ministry. But we're in the kingdom. This is a kingdom. We're going to do it together.
And that's what the early church looked like.
Exactly.
You know, well, this was a great conversation. I especially liked the thought that ordinary people, even if you're broken, by the grace of God, can still plant a house church.
Exactly.
And they can still take the next step and believe that God has something for
us. That's correct.
Okay?
Amen.